And we are back. It is 2025. It is a huge year of sports. I know I could have said that last year and the year before and the year before that, but I tell you what, this year it feels extra special because out of nowhere, I'm going to get into everything this year, but I want to start the show by saying out of nowhere, we care about cricket again. Am I right? Am I wrong?
You know what? I'm going to give it to you. Last year, I slammed Test cricket, and I said...
Well, I think we all did, really.
I said it was the boring end of cricket. This festive season, India, Australia, you know, the South African run as well. It was super exciting. And it was actually great not to have pop-like cricket and have really great cricket once again. Bowling and batting over 5 days, and every day seemed like a new challenge. So
exactly. There was like almost chapters. There was ebbs, exactly. There was flows, there were all these things. And I like my holiday was great. I got great downtime, I had family time. I know you did too.
Yep.
But I look back at the holidays now, I think Test cricket was actually like my high point.
Yeah, it was.
Because Arsenal then obviously played like shit. But I mean, Test cricket was my high point.
Yeah, no, Test cricket really came back this festive season, and it was amazing throughout. And every region or every, can I say every region? Yeah, every region got great cricket. India, Australia, our run as well. I think. It is back, Test cricket. I think it's no longer boring. As outside of the politics of that we talk about in Test cricket, it's exciting again. I think everybody is so tired of, you know, ODIs and T20s that this purest element of cricket and it's being exciting again is super exciting.
Well, when you say purest element, it's like it's high stakes. You know, we spoke a lot about last year about the fact that sport sometimes doesn't have the high stakes. We're cramming in all the fixtures. Every single week, it's just going through the motions. And when, obviously, like we do the show every single week. So in many respects, we go through quite a lot of motions here because we've got to talk about what's happening, what's just happened, what's coming up. Certain events are replicated every single year. Yeah. This past festive season now, I got to actually digest a sport. I got to see it kind of run its course and do these kind of things, the highs, the lows. Yeah. It was really cool, and that in itself refreshed me so much for this year. Yeah. And then I thought, what are we going to start the year with? And I was like, well, we have the world of sport to start the year with. Yeah. So that is it. That's episode 30. This is what it's going
to
be.
100%. And, you know, just to, you know, echo what you were saying in terms of we were so slammed with T20 and ODI cricket throughout last year. It felt good to have 5 days of Test cricket. It felt like we missed it. It felt like we were looking forward to something. And I liked the structure of Test cricket. It's like, where have you been my whole life? And this is what we got. So it was a great advertisement for Test cricket. And I'm going to drop my sword on it and say, maybe Test cricket is back. I'm going to leave it with a maybe.
Test cricket's not dead. There's nothing wrong with it. It just needs its own space. It needs better marketing.
Yeah.
And it's going to get it this year because now the Proteas are taking on Australia in the World Test Final. So that is one of many things that we're going to get into today. We've got the whole year ahead of football, the whole year ahead of rugby, which is a huge year. I know, obviously, the pinnacle of rugby union is the Men's Rugby World Cup, which we obviously won the last two times. There's not one of those this year, but it's pretty much the next best kind of thing in that we've got the British and Irish Lions Tour, we've got a Women's World Cup, and we've got the box playing the All Blacks. So we're going to go systematically through all our major sports that we love, mm-hmm. and give us the highs and the lows. And we're going to show you in this episode the best things for 2025. And of course, what we're looking forward to the most. Before we get into that, obviously, that's the meat of the show. Football over the festive season, as much as Test cricket gave us all a bit of a high, we all enjoyed it.
I knew you weren't going to let...
How is your football festive season?
I knew you weren't going to let me go so easily. You know, I thought, do you, do you? It was fucking terrible. Look, we're in a relegation battle, which is wild.
Talking about Chiefs or Man United?
No, let's deal with Man United first. Man United are in a relegation battle. Man United fans, this is the lowest. But, you know, it can't get any worse than this. You know, it's so strange. I'm watching Crystal Palace hoping for them to draw and lose points.
wow.
And then, you know, in typical Man United fashion, we draw with Liverpool and have a great game.
That was a great game.
Yes.
That was a great game. All righty, so we're going to come back after the break. We have a bumper show for you this week, and the only way we can possibly kick off this year. Catch you after this. Back, episode 30, and there are no dry Januaries here.
Not July.
There's no dry Januaries here. Yeah, we've got so many That's Gold moments, of course, throughout this year coming up. So let's start with cricket because we both were quite animated about it in the intro. Yeah, this week, of course, the major thing today, as you are watching us, the SA20 kicks off.
Yes.
So we are obviously hugely excited by this because if you are honest, this is SA's biggest cricketing product. Mm-hmm. I know we can talk about the fact we've got test matches and we play in World Cups, that kind of stuff. But when it comes to having a product and a platform, this is ours. This is the big one. 9th of Jan through the 8th of February.
Super exciting stuff to talk about.
Yes.
And I think in a year where we're going to be starved of a lot of international cricket locally, this is going to be a big showcase for us.
Sorry, just on that point, you're right.
Yep.
The Proteas do not play in South Africa.
This whole year.
And we'll get to reasons why.
Yeah. I think for me, what's exciting about the SA20 is my four pillars. I'm going to try attack them one at a time. Talent development, we've always been talking about it.
Correct.
Who is going to come through this year? For me, I have got Marco Jansen coming again. I think coming off the last test series, it feels like Marco Jansen now is a bona fide all-rounder.
Well, he's ranked 2 in the world rankings for all-rounders.
Yeah, and
ICC
like,
number 2.
And maybe it's my exhaustion of whatever I was going through with the Proteas. I didn't know he was that good a batsman and so aggressive. I mean, if he's going to be that aggressive in test cricket, it's super exciting what he's going to do in the SA, in SA20. And that team has got a lot of firepowers. I think the EC Sunraisers are going to, go back.
Well, they're looking for the three-peats.
Back.
Yeah.
They're three-peating that. Outside of that, I've got Tristan Stubbs as well. I think he's a big finisher. Huge, huge finisher in terms of young talent, people to watch out for as well.
People forget he's young because he looks like that sort of mid-30s PE teacher looking to pick up your mom.
Yeah, and
but he's actually young.
And he's a huge finisher. He had some very, very iconic, finishes last season, and that's going to be good. For me, one of the true players that I am excited for is Dewald Brewis. If I pronounced it wrong, please don't kill me. He was super exciting throughout last season. 66 of 32 balls against the Protea Capitals at Centurion. I hope he kicks on. He's a super exciting talent. And then who everybody's talking about is, his Gwena. He's the youngest Protea in all platforms now, test ODIs and T20. He's got a big, big light on him now. I want to see, does he step up? Because now it's our biggest local tournament. And it's going to be interesting to see how an 18-year-old turning 19 has that pressure on him. And once again, platforms like this are exciting for young talent and, a big showcase for South African talent.
It's such an interesting point that you make with that because, as you said, Gwena Park has been given the debut at the Proteas, the highest stage.
Yes.
But this particular SA20 is like, okay, how good is he really? Because now we get to see him consecutive days through the weeks. And it's an action-packed thing. Like we saw with the IPL too. When the guys go to the IPL, they earn their money.
You got to get it.
You are on a plane, you're in a hotel, or you're on the cricket pitch. 100%. And you play throughout. So we get a whole month to say, that looks showing promise. What's he really got? And I know it's T20 format, and we're getting excited about all the other ones. But cricket is still cricket when it comes down to these sort of things.
100%.
How do you perform under the lights in front of the crowds when you need to actually chase something? So I'm hugely excited. There is a smattering of international stars.
Yep.
Sadly, Ben Stokes pulled a hamstring or tore a hamstring.
Is he out now?
He's out.
Official.
So end of last year, I think it was announced he'd be out for 3 months.
Damn.
I was quite gobsmacked by that because he's a great guy. Yeah. He was going to play for MI Cape Town.
Yep.
Great guy to have in the mix. But there's a couple of sneaky internationals that Rashid Khan.
Rashid Khan from Afghanistan.
The captain of Afghanistan.
Leg spin like crazy.
But he is the MI Cape Town captain.
Yeah.
Joe Root's playing for the Royals.
Yeah.
We've got a guy like Jimmy Neesham still playing for Pretoria Capital. So there's a couple of the sneaky under the sort of radar internationals too. These guys add great value.
And you've got, what surprised me is that the New Zealand contingency coming down, for the various teams. I mean, for MI Cape Town, we've got Trevor Bolt. I hope I got it right.
Trent Bolt.
Trent Bolt.
Trent Bolt for a long time was world number one ODI bowler.
And he's coming down for MI Cape Town and he's going to slot straight in.
I prefer to call him Trevor, quite frankly.
Trent Bolt, everybody knows iconic, the ODI 7-for-34, against the West Indies. He adds a lot of gravitas. Oof, gravitas.
Yeah.
Into
the
global.
Go on, Trevor, you gravitas.
into the global appeal of the SA20. And also the other New Zealand batsman, Kane Williamson, he's ultimately their all-time leading test opener. And, it's nice to see huge players coming down for the SA20.
Okay, let's not get too excited. I mean, these aren't the hugest players.
It's not the hugest, and but I tell you, take a step.
But it's like these guys, almost like the gateway to bigger things happening. So exactly. Where I want to go, because like we've got 7 years of sport to get through here. 100%. With so much push, prep. Right? So I want to wrap up our little T20 or SA20 preview here by saying is that it's the third year around, okay? So there might be a bit of fatigue with cricket fans right now.
Yeah.
But I almost think, and I know this is like, it feels almost a bit poncy for me to say this because I don't want to become across as preachy, but as SA cricket fans, we moan about a lot.
Yep.
A lot of the time for good reason, okay? But every now and again, we have the obligation to give our side back.
Yep.
So if we fill out the stadiums for SA20, SA20.co.za, go get your tickets. Mm-hmm. If we fill it out, then the players play in front of full crowds.
Yep.
Sponsors are going like, we want to put money into this tournament. International stars are going, we want to come back. Other international stars are going, we want to be in the mix.
Yep.
And before you know it, strength versus strength to strength to strength, and then we're getting bigger players. We're not just getting the guys at the end of their careers or the start of their careers. We're getting primes.
Yeah.
And I think as fans, we forget that we have a really important role to play in these kind of things. So SA20 is on right now. It's going to be in all the major centers, of course. There's going to be Paarl, Cape Town, Durban, Gqeberha, Pretoria, and Johannesburg.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think go down to your city. Obviously watch the games because as this thing gets stronger, we can only get better players in.
100%.
And then I'll totally back you up. Big names. Then
huge.
They will have them.
Huge names. And I think for me, the fixture that I'm looking forward to the most is the opening game, EC Sunrisers versus MI Cape Town, because of the amount of investment MI Cape Town has gone into it. EC Sunrisers, back-to-back champions. Let's see if they can do it again. So that's going to be super exciting.
So another thing that's happened this year is the ICC Champions Trophy, which is basically like the COSAFA Cup of cricket. Although it is the top 8 teams in the world playing an ODI thingy. Yeah. Now, why this tournament was significant back in the day is because this is the only silverware.
It's the Hunty Cup.
this is the only thing the Proteas has ever won. Yeah. As in 1998, Mike Rindle, I think, opened the batting. Like we had some Derek Crooks. We had some interesting guys playing in those
Shout
days.
Shout out Derek Crooks, man. That guy was like, you know, he was all-time a bit.
Shark Cullis was man of the series back then in 98, and we won that trophy. So they're playing it again, and they're playing in Pakistan. So that's quite a cool thing because, obviously, with like all the violence and then there was all the terrorism kind of things. And then,
quite a cool thing.
Well, let me finish the sentence. Pakistan didn't have international cricket for quite some time because it was deemed dangerous.
Yes.
It wasn't the Kenyan team that got there and they got all shot up.
Yeah.
So slowly but slowly, they try to get international cricket back there, yeah. And now there's a huge tournament. So interesting thing as well is that India are now playing in
Elephant
Pakistan.
In the room.
Yeah, because India didn't like them that much.
Yes.
So this tournament is significant in a variety of ways. I know it's like another international tournament. Yeah. It feels like we're going doing football again. But 19th Feb to 9th of March, ICC Champions Trophy.
Controversy once again surrounding India throughout this tournament. So just to expand on what Ben is talking about is India have refused to play in Pakistan. A lot of negotiators between all the sporting bodies. And now everybody's saying that India have an unfair advantage because they get to play all their games, semi-finals and the finals, if they get through in Dubai.
In the UAE, yeah.
So what do you think about that? It feels like the World Cup all over again, what we were talking about.
Economics. I mean, I don't know how else we can have this conversation on us because these guys will always, they run so much. And because they have the IPL, which is the pinnacle of cricket, they do make these decisions. So, yeah.
It's becoming like so brazen now what India are willing to do for the sake of cricket. And it's, you know, it's the deep pocket theory that we always complain about.
They do for the sake of themselves.
Yeah.
But that's what makes, again, when they get beaten like they did in Australia, all the sweeter. Because you watch that and go, ha ha.
Yeah. So they're becoming a little bit of the Man City of, you know, cricket. So we wish them absolute ill, I hate to say it.
Carmel always find a way. Yes. Carmel will find a way.
Yeah, that's crazy that happened. And it's, you know, for a tournament that was, you know, off for so long and now coming back, something like this to shadow it is a bit of a downer. But let's see what happens.
It'll always find a way of adding this little dynamic there. And you know what? Ultimately, it's not like it's being played in Pakistan with India's games in India.
Yeah, 100%.
UAE, whatever it is. Cool. Worthwhile tournament. And of course, another chance for us to pit ourselves against the best. Yeah. Now, I know the Proteas, when we say they're not playing in SA at all this year, you'll see why. Because we go to Pakistan. We play a little triangular before that with New Zealand and Pakistan. Yeah. We tune up nicely. But then, obviously, IPL, 14th of March, 25th of May, that is like the big one for all the players. all the players prime themselves to that because they know who their daddy is, so to speak. There's nothing else I can say about it, right?
Nah.
It's the 18th year it's happening as well.
I'm not even going to talk about it. You know my politics with the IPL.
I'm not going to watch it, okay? Like, I like cricket. If it's on, I haven't watched the IPL since it was actually here in South Africa.
Yeah, and this year I'm taking a stance. If I'm oversaturated with something, I'm going to call it out. Guys, respectfully, I'm not watching the fucking IPL.
Respectfully, I've only got so much bandwidth for so much sports. Everything on the list we're going to go around through today, I'm not going to watch all of it, but I'm cognizant of the fact that you might like it. IPL, 18th season, it is what you expect it to be. All the top players, all the top teams, blah, blah, blah.
Fish
fireworks. ICC World Test Final, 11th of June to the 15th of June. This is what we are all really excited about.
This is it. This is it. So many great narratives. Outside of the politics of, you know, how the Test Series and the Test World Cup should be structured.
Yeah, I mean, let's, you know what? Because we're in the final, we'll forget about that because it's all worked to our advantage this time around.
And Michael Vaughan, sorry. We apologize that England couldn't play at Lords this time. But do we care? Absolutely not.
And Michael Vaughan, also, take your head out of your own ass there. You player who's in front of you, because we weren't given test match series against India, Australia, and England, doesn't mean that we're not worthy finalists.
I mean, let us go. You know, I just had to show Michael Vaughan. Like you bitter throughout a festive season. Tell your team to win some games, but let's not overshadow how exciting this is going to be. Like I said, this feels like a new energy around test cricket.
Yes.
For me,
Proteas test cricket team.
For me, a lot of great narratives with the Proteas. Themba Bavuma's return.
Sixth ranked in the world, Themba Bavuma.
And once again, it's a new year, so I will hold my apology once again. Shout out Themba Bavuma, and welcome back to it. And also the new guys who are coming through the ranks. Ryan Rickleton. We didn't know your game was like that, my dear sir.
Yeah, Ryan Rickleton, he played possum through the white ball stuff, and I was thinking, oh, this guy's going to cock it up again.
And I was like, my brother.
Massive double 100.
I said, this is you. Jacques Carlos, just to give everyone context, Jacques Carlos waited his whole career to get to somewhere close to that. This guy just knocked it out like he had been a seasoned professional. That, for me, lets me know that he's probably going to kick on and become who Aidan Markram was meant to be.
But like also the belief, right? Not just for him, but all the guys around him now. They go like, okay, cool. We're not the... Because going into this Pakistan test series now, only one oak had an average over 40. Themba.
Yeah.
Just one oak. So the batting around there was so brittle. And you saw the Centurion where they almost lost it. Let's be honest there.
And we were chasing like
one. Kakiso and Marco Janssen came in there and they won it with balls. Not technique, balls.
And that makes me slightly nervous going to this finals, because which Proteas team is going to arrive?
Okay, so because it's a one-off test, and because we know we're happy to be there, I think it's the best possible outcome. We know that we're the complete underdogs.
Yeah,
Australia just hammered India. Australia got a good team. They are complete and utter favorites.
Yeah.
Our guys could not be a better script for our guys.
Look, I hear you, but you know we've always got that final curse. We got to win a big final.
We got it, but at the same time, who cares?
Who cares? You know we care, Ben. We're going to be tuned in for 5 days. But for me, the last thing I really want to say on that is I am happy that the Proteas batting order feels like we're going in the right direction. But then in the same breath, we get 600 and then we can't bowl
the guys. Okay, look, at the same time, great test wicket to bat on.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. It's a great wicket that we saw. Remember when England got 670 some shit a while ago.
Yeah.
And then what do we get? We got like 620 in response.
Yeah.
It's a good time to bat sometimes at the Newlands. Cool. So look, I'm hugely excited because the big underdog story. I'm hugely excited because it gives us a chance to really care about Test cricket. For those 5 days, I'm going to be doing little work. We're going to be having watch parties at bench warmers.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fantastic week in June. Yeah. So the other thing to look into for cricket before we wrap up this sport in our 2025 preview, the ICC Women's World Cup's in September.
Yeah.
They haven't confirmed the dates just yet. I don't know if it's just me, but hear me out. I think when you see World Cups, there's a T20 one and there's an ODI World Cup, okay?
Yep.
Men and women, which means every year there's a fucking World Cup.
I felt like we just came out of a World Cup where we should have won.
All I ever hear is, and now back to the Women's World Cup. But like, that was last year.
Yeah.
It's like there are so many World Cups, and between the two codes, because men's and women's cricket has been given a good shift at the moment, which is cool. Great for both games. but there's too many World Cups. Got the ICC Champions Trophy. Test World Cup, different thing, love it. So what I reckon, this is what I propose. ICC, you're not listening, nor do you care. But we should now scrap T20 as a World Cup. We've got the IPL, we've got the SA20, we've got big bashes, we've got all this. T20 cricket was meant to be an exhibition, like a concept car. And it goes to franchises, amazing. International teams want to play it, cool. Why do we need a World Cup on top of that?
T20 is like the marvel of everything. It's going to be the blockbuster.
It's the pole dancer of everything.
Yeah, it's
Let's have some substance. So ODI is a phenomenal strategic platform for cricket. If we make that the World Cup, it'll put more emphasis and more gravitas onto that format. If we take away the T20 World Cup, because it's not really that interesting. A guy would rather make 100 in an IPL match than a T20 World Cup.
I have a different opinion. I think maybe the ODI World Cup got to go.
But then there's no idea ODIs. T20's already got all the tournaments.
So the crazy part is that if you look at the three platforms of cricket, the one that's probably now the least exciting, so it's changed so quickly, is ODI format.
Because it needs time to breathe. As we said, this is becoming an entire cricket podcast. Yeah. As we said at the start of the show, we gave Test cricket the chance to breathe over the festive season, and we loved it. If we give ODI cricket a chance to breathe, as in it's the only World Cup, we'll love it.
I'll just give it 3 years. 3-4 years breathing period like the World Cup in football. Maybe, you know, it gets more gravitas. Is it every 2 years? Or is it just because we have the T20?
It goes back to what Blue Cantrell said all those years ago. You've got to let it breathe.
That's not expect that quotable.
That is cricket, guys. That is the solution for all of cricket.
Way to close the segment on a Blue Cantrell quotable. Shut up.
Okay, so the last thing for cricket in 2025 is the Ashes. The English are going down under. They're going to get hammered. Yeah. But that's going to be really cool for the neutral. Look, it was a tournament that was built on hubris. The English thought they were unbeatable. They lost. They burnt the bales. Mm. They hung their head in shame, and now they can't win this thing back from Australia.
And they don't stand a chance.
So that's 30th of November through to the 8th of Jan. So that's pretty much cricket. We need to get straight into rugby, because what a rugby year we've got.
Yeah. Now,
as always, we start the rugby year, the URC, Basic Champions Cup. We'll get into that in a second. But the Six Nations. So the Six Nations, as you know, they've got a new logo.
Strange.
So they look like they've got the free version of ChatGPT, and then what they did was is that they got.
They really look
what
like.
What the fuck is that? M6. Okay, the strongest thing here is the Guinness logo, the sponsor.
Thank God we know that it's Six Nations.
It just looks stupid.
And the little squiggle.
The squiggle there for men, I'm imagining.
I'm assuming.
It's cuck. If you are watching this visually, you'll see how disastrous this logo is. Yeah. Six Nations, the European teams, all these teams, they get humbled in the World Cups. They never really win outside of England, 2003. And then in the autumn internationals, where they think they can put the wood over the Southern Hemisphere teams again, they also don't always win those ones.
Yep.
The Six Nations is like, it's like when an impala goes into one of those game reserves where there's no predators. They run around a little bit faster. They're a little bit bigger and they're a little happier because there's no predators there. They know who they're playing against.
You're like the sanctuary of some sort.
But Ireland, France, these two teams have to be extra ruthless, because everyone says France is basically the greatest team in the world because they bemoan the fact of how the Springboks play and all that kind of shit. Whatever. Ireland also have always thought they're the best team in the world.
So they play the best team in the world.
So these two teams, if they don't win the Six Nations, then they don't vindicate themselves at all.
Look,
so that's a cool dynamic in itself.
I agree to a certain extent, but I think, you know, Ireland being back-to-back champions is you know, a testament of how good that team has been. They're unfortunate not to win the Grand Slam because England just randomly
forget
all these, you know, fireworks.
So
this Six Nations is going to be super exciting because of the two teams you've mentioned. Where does France kick on now? Because they lost the tournament because of the first game against England, and then you've got Ireland.
England are absolute cock blocks.
Yeah, just like they're like nobody's gonna have a good time, and then you've got Ireland who are like, are we on a three-peat and say this is the last time we can run this thing back? It's exciting because they're neck and neck. And anytime they play each other, it's relatively close. And I think England is going to become a bogey team for them once again.
Of course they will.
You know? Yeah.
Other cool dynamics to look at here is that I think Leinster, after not winning trophies for the last couple of years, they're going to win this year. They're going to win URC. They'll get to the final. So I think Ireland and Leinster can't win at the same time. So I think it's going to be a great year for Leinster, not so much for Ireland. I think France are going to win. They have to, because I think there's so much smoke has been blown up Anton DuPont's ass in the last 2 years. He can power this whole thing. But another thing, another dynamic to look into this, is that France are going to win because the other teams are going to be so fixated about this British and Irish Lions tour.
Yep.
Okay, obviously not Italy or Wales because those two teams are shite.
Yep.
But I think there's so much going on here. I think France have got a more of a tunnel vision kind of thing. The other Oaks are going to be worried about their places in this team. I don't know that it's going to do to their own national dynamics.
Yeah.
France, for me, all money on France.
France,
England just haven't got a good enough squad just yet. They haven't won enough games in the last 18 months to even believe they can do this.
So for me, it comes down to the crunch. You know, Ireland find a way to always win the Six Nations, especially when it's, you know, these two back-to-backs have been a testament of how good Ireland have been, especially post-World Cup. France feel like they're not clicking over to the BMT part of their game. Because
did you see how they ended the year last year, though?
Did you see how they started the Six Nations? You know, these are the things.
That was last February. I'm talking about the Autumn Internationals.
No, 100%.
End of last year.
And big time tournaments, will France show up? That's what everybody's big concern is with France, because you go out in the World Cup so early at home. You go into the Six Nations outward favorite. You lose your opening game. Is there a mental block into, you know, when you have to go win it at the highest level? That is my issue with France right now. No, Ireland is actually still that good.
Absolutely. I completely understand what you're saying that. I just think that this French team, give it a bit of time, let them breathe again. This is the theme here. It's a generationally good side that's going to peak at this next World Cup. And I think we're going to start seeing that from this year onwards, how incredibly good these guys are. So I reckon they got it. But
can they do it without DuPont if he gets hurt again? Because we've seen...
You won't get hurt. They look indestructible.
We've seen in the Investec situation, he got hurt again and was dropped towards the end of the year with their last couple of games. I am interested to see how they build the rest of the team outside of DuPont being the guy. You know, they've got great players, but now as a team, they need to step up because it can't be him only having the great game and then everyone else.
Yeah, look, it's not like a soccer Arsenal situation. France do have a bit more. Anyway, you spoke about the Investec Champions Cup. The final for that will be on the 24th of May. There will not be a South African team in it. Spoiler alert.
Let it go. We tried to give you narratives last year. Our bad. We apologize. We're terrible at this thing.
You know what? Like this Investec Champions Cup, it's a bit like when you go to a really big party in December and you go, fuck, really cool to get a table. Like, I want to be near the DJ. You're like, how expensive could the tables really be?
Oof.
And you and your crew pull in there, and the guy's like, dude, you're in for 20K just to get going here.
You're just like,
and you're like, it's cool. I'm going to go to the URC back by the dance floor over there. Because we can't compete with these prices, these people.
You know, it is such a humbling experience as a South African rugby fan to see how like these other teams are actually great. I mean, Toulouse is awesome.
Toulouse will be this weekend in Durban with DuPont playing his only second senior international game in Southern Hemisphere.
We're getting cooked.
Yeah.
And I hope I get it right. La Rochelle, great team as well, playing incredibly well. There's so many different narratives. There's so many different teams who are world class. And we were always like, we're probably the big dogs of rugby. Till you go play the big dogs of rugby in that format. And they absolutely, you know, show up.
Exactly. The URC final will take place on 14th of June. There's a good chance the Bulls might be there. It's either between the Bulls or the Sharks from the SA standpoint.
Not a chance.
Stormers haven't re-kicked on. I think the Lions also stumbled a little bit more than they were hoping to. So, look, I think Leinster could win both of those tournaments because Ireland themselves aren't going to lose too well this year. But then the big one for me is the British and Irish Lions tour of Australia. 28th of June until the 2nd of August. Yeah. Interesting enough, it kicks off against the Pumas. They're playing the test match against Argentina. It's like as they leave, okay? And then once they're on the road itself, they play all the big franchise teams from the big franchise teams. Yeah. They play the franchise teams in Australia.
That's crazy.
So how it always works is you've got the midweek game where the sort of second stringers go, and then the best team always plays on the Saturday. So the Saturday, or the Wednesday in this case, the Western Force. Then they've got the Queensland Reds, New South Wales Waratahs, and the Brumbies. And then because Australia doesn't have that many players, they've got invitational Aussie and New Zealand team.
That's so strange.
Taking them on before the first test. So first test is 19th of July, and then there'll be a Melbourne Rebels. Okay, well, they're defunct, so it'll be like a Melbourne invitational team.
As of today, Royal AM.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And then there'll be the second test, and then there's no other games, and then a third test. So, I mean, we all know the Wallabies aren't where they should be, but they showed great signs towards the end of year tour last year, and they're going to be hugely competitive, and they're putting a lot of effort into this tour for obvious reasons.
Yeah, and you know, Ben, before we like get into those nitty-gritties, I think for me, as and you know, you being so passionate about rugby, please tell me what's so unique about this British and Irish Lions tour, and what is the actual big deal about it?
So it was about taking a massive touring group to go get absolutely hammered far afield and escape your wives back in the early 1900s.
Okay.
And then it became the British and Irish Lions only like about 20 years after it started. I don't have all the stats on me now. Obviously, I wasn't expecting this in-depth question.
Sorry.
No, it's great. But the Irish then joined them afterwards because it was the British Lions.
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, British and Irish, so that's why the name extended. And it's just one of those amazing things with so much history, and like the legacy of this is so great because it's meant to symbolize what the spirit of rugby is all about, okay? So back in the day, we used to have tours. All teams would do tours. And then we had competitions because that's how we made money. But this thing is a throwback to where rugby used to be. It was a throwback to complete and utter camaraderie, Oaks just being together, galvanizing as a group of all kinds of people. But also, these Oaks were feral back in the 70s. Eh? They used to jaw flat out. They used to fuck up hotels. They used to run out on bar bills. They were absolutely unhinged. Yeah. There is so much history with the British and Irish, or the British Lions back in the day, coming to South Africa in the 70s. Yeah. Of course, you know, you've got all the political uncertainty and drama, all that kind of stuff. You've got these guys coming to try and prove a point and to take on these hard bastards who were the Springboks, who in their own world, in their own silo, they were unbeatable. These Oaks came through and they hammered them. This was back when the Welsh were the best of the best of the best. So the British and Irish Lions rugby as a product, as a brand, as a history kind of point, symbolizes so much of where this game has been as to where it is now. And it's a shame that it almost takes a back step. But because, in our theme today, it happens every 4 years, it gets a chance to breathe.
100%.
And we all get to appreciate what it is in its single entity.
Yeah.
So that would be my whirlwind trip of why this is so great.
I'm going to try to breeze through these next two questions that I have for you. In terms of team selection, how does it work? And then we're going to run through it. Home nation, what are they going to contribute, you know, this year in terms of, you know, you've touched on it. I don't think it's going to be a complete whitewash. Please tell me, how did team selection work?
So it also comes back to how does the coach get picked? Because basically they pick a local coach from one of the home nations, essentially. Yeah. Warren Gatland's got in there because he's obviously been a Welsh stalwart. Yeah. They've now gone with Farrell from Ireland, the Englishman.
Yeah.
Farrell was so good, Andy Farrell, of course, was so good as a coach for Ireland.
Yeah.
It's like that's the coronation of yourself. This is like, I've been a great coach. Once you get the Lions gig, that's when you've now been said, like, you are phenomenal. It's almost like being knighted to have this role. And then from there, you would obviously think he's going to favor the players he knows.
Yeah.
So heavy Irish contingency. Yeah. But I think what you'll see in the selection for the run-on team in the test matches is heavy emphasis on Irish forwards. Mm. And then I think you'll see a lot more Scottish backs.
Okay.
Because if you just look at how dynamic the certain players are, that would make sense. But it always, in any international rugby team, it always comes back to who's you picking as your spine. Mm. Okay, so the halfback pairing is a big deal. Yeah. Who's the fly-off in test matches that's going to be there to like orchestrate these things? Your tight five, a talismanic hooker, those kind of things.
Yeah.
So just like any other international rugby team in the world, you're going to have the same sort of selection pillars. But I think because Farrell, he is quite a dynamic individual, mm-hmm. and his time with Ireland is now lapsed.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be too territorial with him. He is Englishman after all. But at the same time, you only get one dig normally at this. You're not going to fuck it up. You're not going to pick your mates. You want to go there and you want to win.
Yeah.
I don't care how weak Australia is. There's no easy Lions tour.
Yeah.
So I think that's how it's going to break down.
Thank you for that quick breakdown on that. Appreciate you.
Sure, but I mean, like, we'll have an entire preview about the British and Irish Lions tour, obviously much closer to the time. We must get on to the Springbok season. It starts at home against Italy. We've got two test matches, duo test matches. Then we got the Georgians after that. And then the rugby championship starts with us hosting the Wallabies. Now, these folks are going to be a bit pup, I think, from giving their all.
And getting a hidey.
Big thing to talk about. We get to play the All Blacks in New Zealand for the first time in ages. And with this team that's achieved everything in the game, all that we haven't achieved is that win. That win at Eden Park.
You're right, that solidifies the dynasty.
They have not lost there since 1994. They have basically won, is it 50 or 51 test matches in a row there? for this team to go there and beat them at that ground, it's like the final, yeah, we've done it all.
And I think that is it. I think that is Rossi's last tick in terms of his legacy. Not to say that if we lose there, that Rossi's done, but that will solidify them as a true dynasty. And we'll close the chapter and say, this Rossi team is the greatest Springbok team of all time.
Yeah,
but and it's arguably just one of the greatest rugby teams of all time to go to New Zealand and do that.
And it will be. It's like when you do things that other people can't do, then you become the best, right?
Yep.
Going to Eden Park winning, who else has done it? Nobody.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've got the British and Irish Lions win. Mm. We've won 2 World Cups, Rugby Championship, pretty much everything.
Freedom Cup, Mandela Cup, 1962 Cup,
Rayburn Shields eluded us, unfortunately. So what you need to know about with the Rugby Championship, of course, the Aussies will be here for the local spectacles, but the 6th of September and the 13th of September, those are the two test matches over there. We're playing Eden Park and then we're playing the Kegton in Wellington. Hugely important. The final thing you need to know about rugby for the year, obviously the Autumn Internationals are end of the year. We're not going to get into those now, but the Women's Rugby World Cup will be 27th of August until the 27th of September. Now, see, when I say that, Women's Rugby World Cup, you know what it is.
Yep.
So it's like, what's the format? Is it sevens? Is it 15s? There's only one format.
Don't push your agenda here, bro.
There's only one format.
Look, don't try to push your agenda here. This is not about cricket. But I get it. I hear what you say because it's breed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'll be in England. England are going to be the favourites for that. And they were the favourites for the last tournament too. But then they went down to New Zealand at Eden Park.
Mm.
Tough to beat them Kiwis at that stadium.
Eden
man.
Park, eh?
Eden Park.
Whatever muti you guys are using there, you know, bring it here. Give it to the Proteas.
All right. So I've hogged much of the conversation for the show so far. So we're going to go into football. And I've got questions for you.
Okay. Let's go straight into
football. Yes, the first thing to really look at, of course, the leagues are all going to be playing out, the various sort of competitions. The first proper trophy. No disrespect, Carabao Cup, but I mean, Arsenal don't even want to play in that, so let's move on.
That's the crazy part. This is post-Newcastle hammering. You know, had you guys got a dub on that one? I don't know if the narrative changes on that bit. Oh,
it's only the first leg, and the Puma ball swings more. Arteta said it himself.
How ice cold was it that Gordon did the Thierry Henry celebration in the corner? Thank you, Gordon.
That guy is not good looking enough to be that charismatic.
We really appreciate you. The culture appreciates that. Thank you.
Okay, FA Cup, 17th of May.
Yeah.
As a traditional football fan, I mean, is this still something you really care about?
Look, people go and watch that. You know, that is, you know, you mentioned a Carabao Cup, whatever. This is why people go to Wembley. You know, it's got such a great history behind it. You know, such great moments behind it. It's still the prestige, you know, league cup around the world. So it's always exciting. And this year, who is going to be there?
Arsenal.
That is,
17th of May, Arsenal will raise their only trophy for the season. Because let's be honest, I think it's gone now.
I didn't quite hear that, Ben.
I think the league's gone now.
That is hectic.
Because you cannot play Bukayo Saka every single week.
I said that.
He's currently out for 2 months.
I feel like I said that. These are all words that I've said. But talking about the FA Cup, it's going to be super exciting. You know, hopefully, you know, this might be Ruben's first trophy because we play Arsenal on Sunday. And I say that with a straight face.
You guys go in the third round. Of course, it's not Ruben's first trophy. Go Carabao Cup it. Europa League final, 21st of May. Always got his own cool stories.
100%.
Yeah, that's pretty lecker. I also like the trophy.
Yeah, it is.
It's big. It's not trying to be anything too
traditional
special.
Traditional European cup.
It's a nice cup. It's like a weighty cup. Then we got the CAF Champions League final, 24th May and 1st of June. More interesting kind of trophy. It looks more like a building in Dubai.
100%.
Can Pirates go all the way? Do they have the squad depth for this?
It's going to be a true testament, but it's going to be a rough run when they start getting into the business end of it.
Yeah.
But they've done it before. Historically, you know, they're the first South African team to win it.
Sure.
And they're playing great football, and it feels like they're focused. You know, they've got great depth, great young talent. I just worry about them on all, because they play basically all the cups in locally, and then you still have to add CAF into that. fixture congestion is going to be incredible. It's going to be a big test of that squad.
See, that's always the thing, because when it comes to the PSL, there's always that catch-up. Like, you'll see sometimes during the year, they'll be like, this team's on 21, those teams are on 15.
Like 15, yeah.
And then they've got to catch it up at some stage.
Yeah, and if you're running deep in other domestic cups, it's going to be a test of, your grit as a squad. But they have it. They have it, and they've proven it with the games that they've won away from home. That is probably the most interesting part about this Pirates team, is that they can go into hostile territory and take it and still play enterprising football.
Yeah.
And, the guard is kind of changing, because Sundowns are in kind of a limbo with a new squad, with a new coach. So this is the year they should go for it. They will go relatively deep. I'm not sure if they're going to go through, all the way.
Okay, so the Champions League there, the CAF Champions League, there's two legs in that final. It's a bit
strange.
Odd, huh?
Just have a final.
So the PSL final day. So obviously it's going to come down to either Sundowns or Pirates.
Yeah.
Let's not speculate on that right now.
Yeah,
but because it's on the 24th of May, if Pirates technically get into the final, then they can't play the final day, because they've got to play CAF Champions League.
100%. It's happened before, and it's such a strange setup.
Yeah, that's the beauty of the final day, right? Every team plays the same time, same day.
Yeah, so that's, it's happened before, where I think it was SuperSport and Sundowns, where SuperSport played and then Sundowns had to get X amount of goals and they got it. So, look, that final day is always going to be super exciting, and especially where the league is going right now. It feels close. It feels that, Sundowns have some gaps in their game, so they can leak a game or two. And Pirates are just playing incredible football. They don't feel like they're going to lose games. They're playing with absolute confidence. So I think the finale of the PSL is going to be absolutely exciting. I think, once again, South African football is at its highest level. And it's exciting moving into AFCON. So this is probably the most exciting part of the league that we've had in a few years.
Okay, so the very next day onto that is the English Premier League final day.
Oh, yeah.
So this is cool, because obviously, it should be Liverpool's to win. I don't want to be too, drab about this. But if they do lose a bit of legs, which I always thought they would do when they get stretched over different tournaments, then we've got who's going to win. Then we've got the teams vying for the top four.
Nottingham.
Nottingham. Then we've got the teams trying to escape the chop. So on the day, there's all these really cool variables that go around, which is the same as the PSL. I've always got those other things. That's hugely exciting. So that'll be 25th of May. UEFA Champions League final, the big one, 31st of May.
Always one of the biggest occasions in football.
It is, and it's in Munich this year.
Yeah, and
which is great for Harry if his team can get it together.
Nah, it's not going to happen.
Bayern's not going to make it.
But it's also going to be, I think the first time in this format to see who comes through. Do the big dogs run through? Do we go to Allianz Arena and have a big final? Or do we have, back in the day when Porto played Monaco? Do we have a final with a little bit of a lull with this new format? Because we've been talking about it too much, international football.
Yeah.
So will a small team, or a team that hasn't been, drained of all its talent on the international scale, will that be the team that goes into the final? But it's the biggest, one of the biggest football occasions outside of the World Cup. Always exciting.
All right. So speaking of too much football, there is the FIFA World Club competition from the 15th of June to the 13th of July. And as you can see on the screen here, the only person that wants this tournament is this Oak, Gianni Infantino.
Shout out to Infantino.
I mean, he loves it. Yes, he loves it. Okay, so obviously I say it quite flippantly, but like the smaller nations, Sundowns are playing in this.
Yes,
that's kind of cool for them.
Yeah.
So, look, it's basically like a semi-small dress rehearsal for the World Cup that's going to be in America.
Yeah.
So they want to get these guys to go play there. It's a big FIFA tournament. It's got the word world in it.
Yeah.
And just to get local fans to really care, so when tickets go on sale, they can then sell them.
Yeah.
There's nothing more I can really add to the tournament,
it's
right?
It's Kusafa Cup of whatever format of football we call. Nobody really cares about it, but it's always a good, showcase of where people, domestic clubs are. We can always use Sundowns as a measuring stick. When you go play against a Madrid, how far are you from, measuring stick,
but
the
ball. It's always like, what Madrid are you playing though?
Exactly.
You're going to be playing against Vinicius Junior, like the real one.
But for me, it's also a showcase for the players. The players get heavily scouted because they're all these international teams around there. So
yeah, good point.
Those are the gifts and the curses. But for me, once again, too much football, and one of those things where international players are oversaturated with playing too much, and then the quality of the big tournaments becomes bop. So.
Something that won't be the case in our next tournament that we are showcasing, the Women's Euro Finals, the Euros for the women.
Yeah.
Why did I use those words so badly?
Yeah, you butchered it.
The Women's Euros 2025. Yeah. Played in Switzerland, 16 teams, no messing about, a good cut and thrust tournament, and it'll be hugely competitive, obviously. England, again, defending champs.
Yeah,
England look good in the women's with the rugby and the football, huh?
Yeah, but when it comes to the male format, they always suffer. But for me, I think England is going to take it again. That program is so well. That program is so well oiled. They've got so much talent globally, and they feel like what that USA team was in its prime. And I think going into the next World Cup, they probably are going to be in and about, you know, in that.
Cool. So that'll be 2nd to 27th of July. And then finally, the big other like major football thing for the year is AFCON. It's at a weird time. I mean, you get whatever window you're given, I guess.
Strange
time. 21st December to the 18th of Jan in Morocco. Now, of course, Morocco is co-hosting the 2030 World Cup with Portugal, Spain.
Yeah, it's that. It's one of those strange World Cups where everybody gets a piece of the action.
Mm. And then there's even a game in Uruguay to mark the 100th anniversary.
I was just like, you guys are doing way too much, as you know, football has tended to be doing as per usual. So I must go to Uruguay, to Morocco, to Portugal. So strange.
So yeah, that'll be the finest time to shine in many ways, right?
So for me, this is going to be a very, very important tournament for Bafana, because I think ultimately it may be Hugo Bruce's last dance with the Bafana team, unless we get into that World Cup. Can we win it? We've you know, qualifying has been absolutely a breeze. This team is so solid. We have a system, but now the question is, do we kick on? Because we're up there, we're top three-ish in Africa. You know, we can compete with the bigger nations,
as shown even in the last AFCON. Yeah,
we can compete. So now it's the time for us to now make the right adjustment, back Hugo Bruce, make sure he gets everything he has. And it's going to be super exciting again. And it's going to be, once again, a big, big showcase of African footballers and African talent in the continent.
All right, next up for the year, we've of course got tennis. It's the same old tennis, right? You get the four Grand Slams. We've got the Aussie Open, which starts any day now. We've got Roland Garros for the French Open on clay. The Wimbledon Championship on the beautifully cut grass. And then the US Open, which I got to be honest with you, it bugs me when I type in US Open on Google, this tournament comes up before the golf one. Whatever.
Must be so bleak about that.
I'm so bleak about that. That means nothing. So there's a couple of dynamics, and we need to breeze through this, otherwise the show will take about 5 hours today. Is this Novak's last year that he can actually win another Grand Slam?
I think it's the end. I think this is the final run. I think all his homies are gone now, and it's going to be weird for him. It kind of also feels like there is a new generation now that needs to kick on.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm in two minds about it, because you've got someone like LeBron James in the NBA who just keeps on kicking on. And Novak feels like he's that good and he can still do it at a high level.
Yeah, because his age will be 38 by the time he gets to Wimbledon, I think it is.
Yeah.
But then you think, yeah, but you know what? He's sacrificed and what he does. Like, doesn't even eat sugar. Like, there's nothing bad in his diet.
100%.
He doesn't womanize. He's not a boozer.
It's crazy that was your next thing. No sugar, no womanization.
Yeah, but I mean, these are all things that derail a man and his focuses, yeah. Right? Novak straight down the fucking middle serving point in everything in his life. So his 38 is still a young man's 38. Yeah. It's kind of like the Ronaldo of tennis, if
100%.
You will. 100%. Again, you know, maybe not as much womanizing. Look at him, look at Wayne Rooney. So I would love to see Novak kick on, because I just love everything about the dude. I love everything he stands for. I think he's been good for the sport.
Okay.
Because he wasn't the obvious hero. Yeah. Like floppy-haired Federer or like sweaty, muscular Nadal.
Yeah.
You know, these were obvious heroes. Whereas Novak's like, look, guys, I looked like this. I'm a skinny oak. When he started, I mean, he couldn't play in severe wind. He was so skinny.
Yeah, he was.
And he just cracked on with what he had.
Yeah, and you can't hate him, you know. I mean, you know, back in the day, it was always Federer or Nadal. But then, you know, Novak just came through and just disrupted that. So he's all-time GOAT. And I want to see him play at a high level one more time. I want him to, you know, go deep.
Me too. And maybe it's the Aussie Open.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's now. And it's like he's won there like 7, 8 times.
And we
times.
Can watch it at a decent time. And like the US Open. And, you know, I think it's going to be a great song, but I think this is the last time. And also there's some great talent behind him. It's not going to be a breeze. You know, Carlos Alcaraz is coming back. You know, he had a few fitness issues towards the end of the year. I think he's still a bit bleak about that Olympics. And then you've got your favorite Sinner coming back as well. And You know, that male, that three piece there, but you never know with tennis. There's a random guy who's going to come in and showcase as well. So that's what's super exciting about tennis for me. You know, those Grand Slams are going to be exciting, and a possible new challenger going to come in through this.
Speaking of new challenges, I mean, that's what kind of defines the women's game. You know, I think I forget the stat now, but in the last 10 years, there's only been 9 Oaks that have won men's Grand Slams.
Yeah.
In the last 10 years, there's been 19 women who have won Grand Slams.
We never know who's going to win.
So, I mean, if you look at the current best ones, we've got Iga Świątek and Sabalenka. I forget her first name.
Yeah.
So these two are like the best right now, okay? Świątek's won 5 Grand Slams. Sabalenka's won 3. Sabalenka's the world number one right now. So tennis in the male side was always defined by like the big 2, the big 3, the big 4. Mm. The women's tennis, like this is it. This is the big 2.
Yeah, and they probably, out of the Grand Slams, that 1 and 2 might be, they might win 1 because of how competitive it is. And, you know, if you watch Sabalenka's story, you know, it's super exciting because she went through some major, major lows, you know. And then to see her being number one and winning a few Grand Slams really is a testament of what we always talk about in terms of mental fortitude. But, your women's tennis is so competitive.
You just never know who's going to pop up and win. Where's
Coco?
Again.
We're not even mentioning Coco anymore. Naomi Osaka. We just like, that's how competitive and the talent has been going in and out.
Yeah, I mean, in Naomi Osaka's case, she kind of fell off somewhere along the line. But I mean, someone like Emma Raducanu, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when she won US Open.
I think it was US Open.
She was 18. Guys, yeah. Any excuse to kind of put a picture of her on the screen?
Yeah, I mean,
so I think, well, she's like 22 now, whatever.
Yeah.
Massive injury concerns back and forth, but she epitomizes what women's tennis is about. You can get somebody come out of nowhere, like late teens, win a Grand Slam, or just go back into nothing again.
Like it's back just, into the abyss, it's as just a good old say, the abyss. But I don't think it's great for tennis. I think we need.
Well, I don't know if it's great for tennis, but it's an unpredictable mess that I kind of actually appreciate. See, because
I feel
it's just,
you.
It's just so different to the men's game.
Yeah, because I mean. The problem with it being so competitive is that we're missing a superstar for women's tennis. A true superstar.
But the whole thing is because like the vacuum after Serena is just never filled.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we say like it's chaotic because she was the best.
Yes.
And it really was. Okay, so Formula One. Now this is a huge sport to unpack, and we actually need to get into this at more detail. I think in March when we get into it because February's the testing. We've got, I think it's 24 races this season. Yeah, 24 races. Starts in Australia in March, ends in Abu Dhabi in December.
Yeah.
8 of the 10 teams have a new driver.
This is going to be, you know, outside of cricket, I'm super excited about Formula One.
Me too. It's a fucking huge year for Formula One for a variety of reasons.
Fresh take on Formula One. Stars have left their teams and... We're going to really see a team.
Well, stars. You still calling Checo Perez a star?
Well.
Okay, so look, there's a few dynamics I've got to have here, okay? Yeah, so the first question that everyone comes up with is, who can beat Max? And they've been saying it for the last couple of years now. Can someone beat Verstappen? So he showed last year through that middle section that he can be beaten. Because it's always a combination, right? Like if your team doesn't quite get it right in the car, your power trains are up and down, you got to take a new one, you get a 10-race penalty, 10-position penalty. But Max, through all of that, he weathered the storm, and he was like, I'm still going to win this easily, guys.
I think he's going to absolutely kick ass this season. I think he said, I think I left the gap too open. But if he goes again and he defends it for whatever time, he's got to be up there. You know,
So that'll be 5, huh?
Yeah, that'll be 5.
So 2021, 2020.
I mean, be on the, if he goes 5 on the truck.
It's 5 in a row.
That is insane.
That'll be extra crazy.
Even the 4 in the row, and you know, Max gets such deep hate. The 4 in the row is absolutely dominant.
That puts you down as an all-time great, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
so the other dynamic with Max now is that he's got this new teammate, Liam Lawson.
Looks like
Liam Lawson came from like the secondary Red Bull team. He is, I mean, he looks like Daniel Ricciardo's kind of shy cousin. But this is the Red Bull thing, right? They say it's a bit of a curse. If you drive with Max, firstly, you
don't stand a
you're
chance.
Not that important. Yeah. And secondly, you're not going to last that long.
Yeah.
But now Liam Lawson, he was a good Formula 2 driver, which a lot of these guys are because that's how you get into Formula 1.
That's how you get in, yeah.
Is he going to last? What's the season going to be like? Will he be okay with playing second fiddle?
Look, as a young driver, he's going to have to learn the ropes from Max, you know. But Constructors' Championship, that's the biggest story about Red Bull as well and a lot of other teams. But
well, especially, you know, Rebel, because they finished third last year.
Yeah, and now you're not putting in experience. You know, a lot of people thought they were going to find some experience, someone who can drive.
Should have had Carlos Sainz, just saying.
I mean, Carlos Sainz has now gone into the abyss.
Williams, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be like, I would have put in a Carlos Sainz there.
Yeah, me too.
To make sure you compete for constructors, because that's where the gap now between cars now gets built.
And to give Max a bit of like support, because when Checo Perez at his best, Max always knew he had someone at his back.
100%.
The reason why he wasn't so dismissive of everyone else last year is because he was fighting alone.
Yeah.
So the other massive dynamic, obviously, it's so huge, is Hamilton going to Ferrari. Hamilton at Ferrari at the very much twilight of his career. And he is, let's be honest, he's the second driver there. Charles Leclerc is the first driver.
That's crazy.
Charles Leclerc was the only guy Ferrari gave a contract to that went over 3 years. They always wanted the soak to be their guy.
That is such a big call. I think Lewis is going in as the primary driver because of the narratives around this blockbuster move. And it's such a slap to Charles Leclerc's face, because everything is going to be about Max this season. About Lewis this season.
But it's
weird, right?
This is something we need to debate. Obviously, closer to the time here. Yeah. We can't get into today.
Yeah.
But you're right. It is. And that's how it should be. Because Lewis, like we said last year, yeah, if Lewis wins in Ferrari, he's now the GOAT,
yeah,
because he will then get the eighth world title
over Schumi.
Yeah. And he's done it with later stage, different car.
Yeah.
So Mercedes replacement, we've got to get into this. Kimi Antonelli. Have you seen this oak?
This looks strange to me. Like I told you.
Kimi Antonelli, he's the oak.
Isn't this guy meant to be going to Patrick Vac at the end of this year?
He's 18. It looks like his mother just dropped him off for a work experience day with Toto and George there.
And like this, is this a real photo? This feels like, you know, job shadowing or something.
But you've got to understand how good this oak is, because Mercedes have to get back to winning ways. They could have bought a fair few other people.
Yeah.
They've got some curly-haired Italian oak.
This guy clearly must be able to drive this whip, because
he's 18. What has he driven? Like,
this is who you replace. Guys, you replace the GOAT with this guy. So,
it's crazy, but also exciting.
And you know how George is. George is a bit pissy in this type of situations, and he really wants to compete this year, because once again, the spotlight is on him, and where to from here for Toto and his team. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, so McLaren, obviously, that is the team that everyone's going to be looking for, because they won the Constructors last year.
Yep.
They showed they're quick. They showed they can win. These two aren't the two young, fresh-faced kids on the grid anymore.
No more.
They've got the pedigree.
Yeah.
People forget that Piastri was probably one of the biggest stars Formula 2's ever seen.
Yeah.
He showed he's pretty good. He had a bit of a sulk win or whatever. I still don't look at these oaks and go, they're going to win. I just don't.
I think we got to give them benefit of the doubt, specifically for what they did last year. But I think now with the limelight on them and them as outward favorites, apparently, it's going to be a lot different with the pressure on them and them trying to defend it, as you know, a lot of people struggle with. But those guys really drove the great throughout the whole season.
Yeah. Well, look, we will get much more into F1 close to the time, but the F1 movie is also coming out this year with incredibly handsome Brad Pitt. Now, they shot this movie on all the races.
Damson, right? Damson's in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. It's a hell of a thing. They shot like in the pit crew, on the race. It's as real as any sports movie is ever going to be. And the bar is already so high with Drive to Survive, which of course has a new season again this year. But I'm really excited. The F1 movie will come out in June sometime. Just quickly onto golf. Just like tennis, you know, you've got the golfing majors, you've got the four majors, the Masters, the PGA champs, the US Open, and the Open Championship. So those will take place as you would ordinarily have them throughout the season. Something that I feel is interesting about golf this year and the four majors is that it's literally all about Rory finally coming back to get it. It has to be. The Oak won four majors from 2011 to 2014.
Then dry.
Fuck all since then. Being that good. And it's not about saying like, oh, he's great. He's in the top three of the world every single year. He's huge. He's massive. He's a massive deal. But then there, his forlorn face from the US Open.
It feels like this is now the new standard of Rory, because he's complaining about something, rushing off, trying to knock over people in the car. He needs to go back to being the highlight, being golf again. That's the only thing.
So again, you know, we're going to get into this as we get into the different majors and preview them throughout the year. But I mean, Rory just has to win the Masters to win the Grand Slam. He has to make it happen. The PGA Championships, as probably one of his favorite courses, yep, Quail Hollow. He's won there four times as a professional. The US Open, after giving it to Bryson last year, he has to come back. And the Open Championships in Ireland this year. I mean, Rory, this is your year. I don't know if it's year of the rooster, the dog, or whatever the fuck you are.
Just back yourself, mate.
It's your year. Of course, we got the Ryder Cup as well. Now, the Ryder Cup is going to be in America.
that's what I'm probably most excited about.
It is huge, but I think the hometown advantage has made this tournament a little bit too one-sided.
Okay.
2012 was the last time an away team won.
Yeah, but you know what's the crazy thing about golf? You know, you've got to go play it. And you've got to go win it. And let's see what the Europeans are.
I had no idea you had to go win it.
Yeah, yeah, you had to go win it.
Something from you.
You know, one, what I was trying to say is it's mano a mano. And you've got to go pitch up and you've got to go win it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I think, you know, this is going to be Ryder Cup. You know, I wasn't such a huge, you know, golf fan. But Ryder Cup is one of those tournaments where we talk about if you want to really enjoy golf and you're not a traditional golf liker, this is the tournament to get
so
into.
So right. It's action-packed. Yeah. It's easy to follow.
So
it's
many narratives, yeah.
You don't worry so much about score. It's about competing.
Exactly.
It's like fighting. And then the Nedbank Golf Challenge, selfishly for me, is always a massive highlight. That'll again be back first weekend of December. If you are living in this country anywhere and haven't been to Sun City or played this golf course, try and make a plan at the end of the year. Save up. Do whatever you need to do. But go and watch this tournament. It is something special. It's a really great time to be at Sun City. I was there last year. It's such a great time. And the action, it was a really great golf tournament last year. It really was. Johannes Veerman from America won it.
I know you had the time of your life.
So. It's great. It's yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. All right, so we've got to get into the final major attractions just to wrap it up. So obviously there's all kinds of other sports that we cover throughout the year. It's a whole year of UFC like any other year, but the one that we care about most is Dricus beating Sean Strickland again. 9th of Feb in Australia. Sydney this time around, UFC 312.
It is, once again, like I said, it is one of those sporting occasions as a South African that you back your boyki. It was super exciting the first time.
Yeah.
This is going to be huge. This is the UFC feels like Rumble in the Jungle type of situation. And it's going to be glitz and glamour, and it's going to be a lot to get into. So if you don't like UFC traditionally, these are the fights I always say, this is what will get you back into it. So that is going to be super exciting. And on the same day, we're going into the Super Bowl. So it's going to be the 9th of February. Is going to be such a hectic day.
It's a big one, Hess. Nice way to start the year with so much big stuff.
Yeah, we're going huge that day. The big narrative is, can Mahomes go three-peat and ultimately make the Chiefs, the Kansas City Chiefs, the ultimate dynasty, one of the ultimate dynasties in the NFL? And can he be now, at his age, probably online to be one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time?
Which is great, because as much as we love what Tom Brady's done,
yeah,
someone needs to compete with that.
100%, and records are meant to be, you know? Records are meant to be broken.
Indy 500, where are you at with that?
I've never understood it, but shout out to the milk.
Indy 500, 25th of May. Now, I'm bringing this up because this is actually, they say this is the single biggest sporting event, motorsport event of the year. Check the size of that trophy, okay?
You
that's
American,
the
always.
That's the Borg Warner Trophy, I think it's called. Borg Warner Trophy. Yeah. What do you think that trophy's value is?
Just break it down for me. I have no idea.
That trophy is valued at $3 million, okay? It stands.
It looks like that.
It looks like. So if you win, your face goes on the trophy. Actually, they put your face on it.
Yeah,
this thing is so cool. Yeah. The Borg Warner Trophy is so ginormous. This has been going since 1911, the Indy 500.
Yeah, no, that's a weird one for me. But I think just to jump into what I'm also excited about is this year's college football with all the,
I haven't finished with this yet.
Sorry,
my Indy 500.
Shout out to you at the Indy 500. I'm sorry, go ahead.
200 laps of 2.5 miles makes the 500. There's well over 350,000 spectators on the day. On the day. It takes about between three and a half hours to win.
Yeah.
It started in 1911. I had no idea this is just so gigantic because, again, it comes back to like sporting bandwidth.
Yeah.
Side note. So they get almost 350,000 every single time. Which Formula One race do you think gets the most fans in a year?
Is it not going to be Abu Dhabi now? Abu Dhabi?
Silverstone. Old still, English, yeah.
Still good old That's old English.
Okay, go for it. Go with your whatever you want to interject
I'm so sorry
with.
To do that. You know me, I'm going to go jump into what I'm super excited about. College basketball is super, super exciting. We've got March Madness, probably the most exciting format of basketball. It's basically brackets, one to 16. And then throughout the month of March, you know, we get to crown the best team in the NCAA, both female and male. Are super exciting. We've got Cooper Flagg, who last night with Duke was super exciting. He's 6'9". He's probably going to be a generational talent. And then you've got Juju Watkins for USC in the female game. Super exciting. This is all going to be, you know, the big part of the development of the next generation of basketball players. So March Madness, super exciting. The atmosphere is, you know, it's just a college day out in America. You know, those typical frat people getting super excited. And it's such a different dynamic to the NBA where it's more looser. It's actually more structured in terms of the play. It's not, you know, as touchy-feely as everything else. Such a purist end, you know.
High stakes.
High stakes and purist end. One and done. And always some great, you know, great stories, underdog stories who come through. So if you are a American sports lover, please do watch, you know, March Madness. And it's basketball, you know how I feel about it.
Yeah, there's always a lot of hype around that.
Yeah.
If you like cycling, Tour de France is back 5th of July 27th. And the cool thing about this is that it goes back to Paris. It didn't go to Paris last year because obviously the Olympics was on. Traditional routes, obviously the Tour de France is always a different route. They go different places. They often start in different countries even. But it'll be back in Paris for the drive down the Champs-Élysées for that final stage where everyone kind of knows who the winner is already. And then two final things we need to wrap up the show with this week.
Yep.
The World Aquatics Championship, 11th of July to the 3rd of August. So picture the Olympics and the swimming.
Yeah.
And we just had the swimming. So, it's if you like swimming those things in Singapore in July, amazing. Then, even more exciting than that, picture the Olympics, but just the athletics.
Yep.
You guessed it. It's the World Athletics Championships, 13th of September to the 21st of September.
Yes, sir.
So, that'll be the next slide there, Wendy. That, as you can see, the World Athletics Championships. No slide.
As we put that slide in. And last one I'm going to sneak in is the business end.
World Athletics Championships. That is not the World Athletics Championships.
Come on, Wendy.
What's really interesting about the World Athletics Championships is the dynamics that we saw from the Olympics.
Yep.
It always just comes back to the next one, right? 100%. Which is this. So all the angst and things that we saw on the track, the sprinters, the middle distance runners, all those kind of things, it's all coming here. And because Tokyo were obviously COVIDed, which made for a cuck Olympics.
Yep.
They get to host this, which is really cool. Yeah. So it'd be really great to see everyone come out in Tokyo to actually appreciate this. Yep. They get to enjoy this. And, go our sprinters.
100%. And also post-Olympics, post-Netflix sprint. So many different narratives.
So many things. Huh?
And no allows, no more excuses, no COVID apparently. So let's see what you're going to do this year.
Exactly. So guys, it's been a bit of a longer show than usual today, but I think you understand why. This is how excited we are for the year ahead. Everything that we mentioned here is going to be coming at you thick and fast throughout the weeks going forward. The show is going to be the show as you've always experienced, but we're going to have a few new other features that are going to come in as we go. We always appreciate your feedback, of course, whether it's on social media, whether it's on our social media. If you just want to go straight away and say, hey, Ben, what about this or what about that? Or, hey, yep. Sandile, I'm really sorry that Man United lost to Arsenal this weekend. You say what you want to us on the social media. But if you go on to obviously every show week on X at TRN on the Bounce, there will be a weekly poll that goes up. This week's poll, Sandile, you might like it.
I know. Tell me what it said.
This week's poll is, will Arsenal actually win any silverware this year? And your options are no, yes, or lol.
Oof.
So go and vote in our poll. Let me see what you got to say about that. Apparently, no is leading. So that poll is on our X account on TRN on the Bounce on that. So follow us there on X. And, of course, on Instagram as well, on the Bounce Show.
Yes, sir.
That's not what it is. It's on _ the Bounce. That's the actual thing. Look, I mean, the show today could have been 7 hours long, as I said. I am so incredibly excited about so much for sport this year. 100%. I'm so damn excited that we get to sit here and do this all again.
Another year.
And a big thank you to our Heineken sponsor, our Cliptrip sponsor, riding us along on this fantastic sporting journey. And we look forward to seeing you next week, episode 31.